It's time to level up or shut up. Run, jump, dodge, shoot, roll, draw. Get the loot, cut the deck, shuffle good. Sleeve your card like you should. Good time, pour a drink, multiplayer. Team in sync, up, down, left, right. Party chat all night. Yeah, it's time to play. It doesn't matter the day. When are we gonna meet in the party chat?
Welcome to Party Chat, surely the only podcast out there that discusses gaming and gaming-related topics in the niche, little-known hobby of tabletop and video games. Today we're talking about Disney's new games and the upcoming Ubisoft Forward. I'm Jamie McCabe, and here's our host, Aaron Amendola.
Hello, and welcome to Party Chat, surely the only podcast out there that says, you know what, just go for it. You deserve it. It's been a long week. It's only $2. Go ahead, buy it. It might not fill that hole, but you know what? Who knows what will? So just go for it. There's a microtransaction out there that's calling your name, and boy, howdy, you should do it. Friends, we're going to talk a little bit today about some of Disney's new games, specifically talking about Lorcana, which is going to be their Magic the Gathering / Pokemon competitor on the tabletop scene. But I want to talk about Disney's Dreamlight Valley. Y'all, if you play Stardew Valley, if you play if you're interested in the upcoming Haunted Chocolatier Slice of Life games, y'all know I like Slice of Life, then this might be something for you to pay attention to. But something I'm going to discuss about with Jamie in the coming minutes is Disney Dreamlight Valley is a life simulator, very similar to Stardew Valley, where you are charged with saving Dreamlight Valley. And you know who's asking to do that? Oh boy, it's Merlin from The Sword and the Stone. Is that not enough for you? Don't worry. Goofy needs to open up his shop. Does Goofy not entice you? Well, guess what? Donald Duck wants you to open up your own coffers so that you can save his general store. We've got all this and more coming up, but in order to talk about this, I'm going to bring in the Coffeeville Crusader, Spider-Man's little bro. He's bad at economics, but a killer with comics. Jamie McCabe, how you doing, buddy? Not too bad. Jamie, I want to ask you something before we get started. Did you do anything to your audio? Because now it sounds like you're far away. Let's make sure it's coming from the mic and not your computer. Also, don't worry. I put in a timestamp so I can edit this out later. So you figure out what you need to do, and I'll just edit it out. Should we pause? Okay. 3, 2, 1. Here comes boom. Let me mark the footnote and then I'll count you in. Okay. Whenever you're ready, just give me like a 3 count. Hello and welcome. I'm going to take the monologue that I previously did and splice it back in front of Jamie's audio he just re-recorded. So there's the timestamp. I'll do Jamie's intro. Before we can talk about that, I've got to bring in my co-host. We've got the Coffeeville Crusader, Spider-Man's little bro. He's bad at economics, but a killer with comics. Jamie McCabe, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
How we doing, Jamie? How's your Tuesday going?
My Tuesday is going fine. There's a lot of new games and new TV shows to look forward to this week, and I'm ready to dive in.
So I do have a question before we formally dive in, because Disney Dreamlight Valley is a Game Pass game, and I know you just got an Xbox. How's that treating you?
I'm enjoying it. Like, I don't think I've ever said that like Game Pass was like a bad value or anything, but it was just like it doesn't have the games that like I necessarily want to play on it. And for the most part, like I go through the library and I'm like, I'm fine if I never touch these. But it was one of those things, like a few months ago, I got to the point where like I had it in my cart at Best Buy and I was like, I don't know if I'm willing to bite the bullet on this just yet. Like, we'll hold off. And then you mentioned Disney Dreamlight Valley was an Xbox game. And I'm like, sure, why not? So I went in and got all that set up. Surprisingly, the game that I'm spending the most time on, Power Washing Simulator.
Isn't it fun?
It is like amazingly zen. It's just like, I'm just going to go in and clean stuff with hot, powerful water.
I love putting on Power Wash Simulator and putting on a podcast.
I'm sure it's great for a podcast game.
Yeah, just fantastic. Power Wash Simulator is powerful. That is a game you can lose an entire day to.
For me, it's something like if I've got a slow day at work, it's just like I can be playing this, but like there's no reason to care if I have to stop in the middle of something to like go do my job. It's just like, yeah, it'll be there when I get back.
That's kind of how I played Disney Dreamlight Valley today. And why don't we get into it? Disney Dreamlight Valley is a game published by Gameloft, who is primarily known for mobile games. And today is sort of an early access period. If you pre-ordered it or if you are an Xbox Game Pass member, you can take advantage of this early period and start playing. It's going to be more widely available in the next 12 months across a variety of platforms. But for right now, it's on Xbox. I didn't end up buying any of the Founders Pack things, but we got like a Game Pass Founders thing just for downloading it, right?
You did. And you can get it on PC, PlayStation, Switch if you buy like the Founder Pack stuff. Like you can play it on those systems. It's just if you have Game Pass, you don't need that like barrier to entry.
How long have you played?
Like I spent my lunch hour tinkering with it. So like I did my character creation, cleaned up a little bit of the stuff in the house with like the freebies that they give you right off the bat. And then it was like, oh, if you want to open this pack, you should probably sign up for the cloud service. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And then that took the rest of my lunch hour because it kept not wanting to register. And I was not the only person having that problem. It was clearly like just, you know, day one jitters that any big game or launch has. So like I was fine with that. It's set up now. And when we're done recording this podcast, I'll get into like starting the game, I guess.
You will get into that game unless you want to do a final King's Fall or a checkpoint, which I now have, but I understand a more relaxing time might be on the menu. We've got that checkpoint for a full week, but here's the thing with Dreamlight Valley. I've reached the point where it mirrors the time cycle. I have played for probably about two and a half hours off and on throughout the day. And there came a point in time where I realized just how Animal Crossing it is. And I don't say that as a bad thing. Did you end up playing a lot of Animal Crossing when it came out?
When it came out, yes. And I'm sure by now my Animal Crossing village is overrun by feral creatures. Not a patch of clean grass in sight, but yeah, it's, and I imagine this game will go the same way where like I'll play it and unless there's like some sort of big update, I'm like, okay, maybe I should go in and catch up. But
yeah, and I kind of use these life simulators the same way. I like games where it's simple and I get to customize things and I'm not like beholden to it. I think one of the pitfalls of a game like Destiny is if you don't get the story week after week, you have to play catch up at the end. And sometimes doing the same activity over and over and over, you see the cracks in that weekly storytelling. But this seems pretty mellow, pretty chill. In the 2.5 hours that I played, I cleaned up all of these like dark thorns around my house. I cleaned up my house. I found an animal companion and I opened up Scrooge's general store and I helped Goofy set up his pawn shop, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah, and it's just like, it's such a nothing burger of a game, but for whatever reason, all the numbers that are going up make me feel happy. So yeah, I'll keep playing this.
One of the things I saw that I liked is, I can't remember where I read it, but at one point the devs said, like, the only thing you can spend money on in this game is cosmetics. There's no buying, like, energy, because I believe it works on one of those systems where mm-hmm. it's like you can only do so much before the game basically forces you to take a break. So there's no getting ahead that way. But if you want some fancy Mickey Mouse ears, yeah, give us $5. We'll give you those.
Boy. And that is not the thing I'm going to spend money on.
No. Because like being in those games where it's like either, you know, pay to cosplay or pay to win, I will always lead towards the just cosmetics model. It's like people want to look nice and shiny in their games. I don't want to spend $20 on like one like weapon or like character upgrade or stuff like that. But let me give them a fun hat. Sure.
Let me know how your experience was, speaking of customizing and cosmetics, because I tried for like 20 minutes to make my person look anything like me. Yeah. And I got to a point where I was like, it's not going to happen. Maybe I'll wear a
helmet. Oh, no. Like it's a pretty simplistic character creator. I was like, oh, I can put a beard on my guy. Cool. They have two beards and they both just look like bad plastic. And they're also incomplete unless you add like one of the three mustaches they have. I'm like, okay, I guess I can do stubble then, you know. There's limitations, but you do look like a animated Disney character, like at the end of it. Like, that's fun.
For better or worse.
There was one set of eyes that just makes you look incredibly tired. And I'm like, I don't know if I want this kind of realism in the game just yet.
That is what I did. I was like, this is the only one. There's one deep set eyes trait. And I was like, well, there we go. That's me.
It's like I can be real me or I can be like that idealized version of myself. And I'm like, I'll save real me if you're something like Starfield when that comes out. It's just like,
I saved idealized me for Saints Row.
Yeah.
Because one of the great things about Saints Row, and I had it and then I returned it because goodness, it's buggy, but you can still get the character creator. Flopping between the character creator in Saints Row and Dreamlight Valley, two entirely different games, and Saints Row is almost customizable to a fault where I can't help but tinker and like really try to make it look like me. With Dreamlight Valley, and I'm looking here, the first week bonus, if you log in the first week, you get a Mickey Mouse donut headband.
Got that.
And you also a Choco Crocodile animal companion.
Yep, he's following me around.
That's very fun. This is a game that is premiering on PC and consoles, but it's also going to be on mobile. And as I'm playing this Xbox with 60 frames per second, 4K, you know, blah, 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 I was reminded, oh, the cloud thing. I'll be able to pick this up on the go, but it also has to run on a phone. And this is definitely a game that I can see running on a phone fairly easily due to the graphical fidelity and the actual complexity of the mechanics. And I think knowing that, I'm really excited by the idea of having like a robust option to play versus mobile.
Yeah.
But it also kind of set the expectation of, you know, in the end, it will only be as complicated as a mobile game can be. And I'm fine with that. I think my expectations are very well set because of that. Do you get that vibe at all?
I did not know that it was also a mobile game, but I can see that both in like the simplicity of the mechanics and like the stylized, graphics, I guess, that they used. And I'm fine with that. Like, it means, you know, if I'm like on a plane or something, or if I'm, you know, on a trip somewhere, like I can log in, I can go help Scrooge McDuck with something and then come back to reality. I do want to say, like, the part of these kind of games that I enjoy is always like cleaning up the island and being like, gotta get rid of all these and like put the trees where I want them and stuff. So like that part I'm excited about. The fact that there are missions that's like bake 20 whatevers and you'll get like this. There's clearly like some sort of season pass thing that you can get with in-game currency to like unlock the other stuff faster. I gotta, you know, look into that, see how that's gonna work. But like, it's a life sim. You're gonna have that fun. You're gonna do the things in this game you don't want to do in real life.
Oh yeah, I'll clean up my island all day long, but if I didn't want to make my bed, that's not happening.
Yeah.
I think like over time, we're really gonna tell over the first month, like when do we hit that ceiling? Because I'm kind of getting to the point now where I'm not sure what else I can do for the remainder of my first day. I kind of need to wait for other people to wake up. Yeah. I need Goofy to get his shit in order so I can, you know, get new things at his stalls. And there's no way to manually rotate through the stock that they have. But I've cleaned up pretty much everything I can on my island, but I'm missing one material that I need to progress. And the terrible thing is that I had these materials and I sold them. And then I got the quest where I needed them. And so I wonder if other people are, you know, rubbing up against that, but.
All right. So you're telling me not to sell anything.
Don't sell your gems. Don't sell your gems until it needs you to have 7 gems to sell, because otherwise you're going to be running around like a chicken with your head cut off. It's very frustrating, but I digress. Moving into another Disney game, I'm just going to start off. Jamie, have you ever played Magic the Gathering?
I have seen people play Magic the Gathering. I was at the bar on Friday and two of my friends were like, oh, we're going to like build our decks and play here. I'm like, cool. I'll be on my phone and watching baseball. You guys have fun with that. I do have experience with Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon cards and a little bit of the Marvel versus one that they had like 20 years ago that I wasn't.
The overpowered card game.
Yeah. No, it was just called like Marvel versus. Like, I guess like versus is like a skin, is like the game mode. Then you can just slap whatever brands on it. Like, that was fine. It had like a Game Boy Advance or like early DS game. And I was like, this is still just completely inaccessible to my mind. But I am aware of it.
Well, what if I told you you could have all the complexity and fan rabidness of Magic the Gathering, but with Disney? What if I told you about that?
How do I give you my credit card through my computer screen, Aaron?
Yeah, so that's the thing I'm wrestling with right now. We're going to go to our buddy Charlie Hall over at Polygon with the headline, Disney will launch a new card game to go up against Magic the Gathering and Pokemon. Within the article, we can see that Ravensburger, the designers of Disney Villainous, are teaming up with Disney for Disney Lorcana. And essentially what it is, the conceit of the game, is that there's a place called the Great Illuminary. It is a treasury of all the Disney songs and stories ever made. All the characters, it's where they're kind of recorded. The players take on the role of the Illumineer, and they are calling on these heroes from Disney lore to, I guess, battle each other. Like, you want the Country Bears to really fuck up a Goofy movie cast, you can do that.
Oh, man, if I could build a Country Bears deck, if I could build just like an obscure park references only deck in this game. I want that. Like, I want that kind of freedom.
I want Tom Sawyer's Island as my land, and I want it to be invaded with, let's say, the Meet the Robinsons cast. That's a movie that never really got a fair shake. Why not?
Yeah, like this does make me realize, though. Like, I am surprised that Disney didn't have something similar to this like in the past.
So that's the interesting thing, because I think Disney 20 years ago, you know, when we look at when we look at some of the games they were putting out, like Epic Mickey, they were really going out and making their own studios, building stuff from the ground up, releasing things, and whether or not they hit, those studios closed. You know, Epic Mickey 2, The Power of Two, great game, came out, didn't really hit sales numbers, and that was the end of that studio. What I find interesting about this is Disney seems to have tried out Ravensburger almost like a farm team with these Villainous games. And I personally really love the Villainous games. I know Liz does, probably a lot of our listeners do. They've gotten a little long in the tooth because once you do Disney Villainous and then Star Wars Villainous and then Marvel Villainous, they're all kind of the same. But they always had a distinct love for the lore. Every one of these Villainous games, you play a Disney villain and you're given a playbook. So just for instance, let's say you're playing Hades from, I almost said Tarzan, Hades from Hercules. You'd get a playbook and it would basically outline, this is the way Hades acts. This is kind of his old vibe. He wins the game in a very unique way, as opposed to the Queen of Hearts, as opposed to Radagon, you know? And so they really demonstrated kind of an all-knowing hand over these villains. So the fact that they're going to be taking over Lorcana, I don't know that I would pay attention if it wasn't them. I had that history with Ravensburger, Jamie, and I don't think you do. Is this something that excites you, or is this something that you're going to want to wait and see?
It's one of those things, like, I will probably never need to play it myself, but like knowing that's out and knowing like how all these things usually come out with like a starter deck, I've got like those two or three friends where I'm like, that's the perfect like birthday or holiday gift, is like if I, you know, picked that up for you and you don't already have it. But it's one of those things that it surprises me. Like I said, like I'm surprised Disney is just now getting to this. Like in so many ways, Disney has a history of being like in the forefront of things. Like look at so much like movie CGI technology and stuff has come from them, like computer animated movies. Like they started with Pixar, the volume tech they're using on Star Wars now, stuff like that. Same goes for the parks. And then in games, they seem to always be like 10 years behind the trend.
Yeah.
Like I swear, you know, like Arkham Knight came out, or, you know, Arkham Asylum, the first one. And then Disney was like, oh, maybe we can make good games instead of just like handing off an IP to whoever. And so like eventually we start to see the benefits of that with like the Spider-Man, the Guardians, Avengers and stuff like that. There's rumors of a Black Panther game. We'll see.
Oh, it'd be great.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah. They
but
really
like the time for this partners. Was like late 90s, early 2000s when Pokemon cards, Yu-Gi-Oh! And like Magic the Gathering were all like very popular. But no, it's 2022. Let's do it now.
Now, based on a starter deck, because that's what you reference, if you were gonna jump in, I'm gonna name a price point for a single starter deck. And let's just say this deck has everything you need to play out of the box and you can hit the ground running. Would you pay $20?
I think 20 is fair because, again, being Disney branded, and this also, I think, applies to Dreamlight Valley that we were talking about earlier, a lot of your main audience is probably going to be kids. So you want it to be, you know, something that they don't have that cost of entry blocking them. It's like, you can mow a couple lawns, buy this if you want, you know? That's it for a full starter deck. $20, maybe $25, depending on how much it is. Because I think that's about what you could get, like, the full Yu-Gi-Oh! 2-pack starter when those started coming out. Like, I had those.
Yeah, I was thinking of Keyforge, where a single deck is, like, $10. But also, that's priced in a way, and every deck is unique, to get you to buy more and more. So $25 for a 2-pack feels fair. I was expecting to have to go much lower for you. So for like $25, I could get that. We could have a full day.
And again, I think it depends what it includes, like how many cards. Like I'm picturing like a thick, fat Magic the Gathering deck. If it's, you know, something a bit smaller, then yeah, the price should match that.
Theoretically,
but I think like a full Yu-Gi-Oh deck was like 60-70 cards, and I'm like, yeah, that's $20, that's fine.
I'm once again going to reiterate my interest in having the PS3's Eye of Judgment come back.
Yeah,
that was the original Yu-Gi-Oh. It would have been fantastic, and that'd be great for Lorcana. You know, you'd actually get to see Goofy take out a baseball bat and beat up, oh, let's say, the hoodlums from 101 Dalmatians. That'd be really fun. Like, that's something that I would pay $25 a deck to see.
I hope this becomes successful enough for them to eventually make a video game of it, because that's how I've experienced a lot of these games. Is like, I'm not going out and buying like the single, you know, the booster packs and stuff, but like, give me a video game. Yeah, I can take a look at that, you know.
Yeah, and it wasn't really until the Ultimate Team stuff in FIFA took off that people really started to do this. I'm fine as long as it's fair and as long as it's an IP I want to contribute to. I would totally do that. Between Dreamlight Valley and Lurkana, which one do you see yourself playing more in a year?
Probably Dreamlight Valley, just because
it's easier.
And it's that, and like, you don't have to have another person that's playing it, or like, they don't have to be there with you. Like, I love you, but I'm not driving down to your house every time that we want to play Lurkana.
I know. Well, maybe I'll just do like a Lurkana tournament day, and I'll set up a bunch of tables downstairs, just like I did for Keyforge. I'm going to rope you in one way or another. God damn it. I'll figure it out. I'm going to throw a net around you. Speaking of nets, and gosh, I'm really good at the segues today. Jamie, I want to talk to you about Ubisoft Forward, because we've got quite a bit that we don't know about Ubisoft, including today, Tencent invested quite a bit of money into the company. Not for a controlling stake. Ubisoft is still going to be controlling their old family company that they've had for decades now. But the fact that Tencent is investing always gets my eyebrows to wiggle a bit. But Ubisoft Forward, aka the Ubisoft Nintendo Direct, is going to be going up on the 10th, where they have said they will be talking about Assassin's Creed Mirage, their new Assassin's Creed game. Jamie, before we get into what that game entails, what do you want to see out of an Ubisoft Forward? Is there any IP that you'd be excited by? Any announcement that you're waiting with bated breath? What's going to get you hyped?
I've been saying it for a decade, but you could throw out another one of those 2D Raymans like anytime, and I would be there day one. Like, those were such fun, and they do nothing with it.
No, for me, it's Prince of Persia. That's another good one. Man, the 2008 or 2009 Prince of Persia, one of my favorite games of all time. One of the coolest endings. And I say that like the actual game ending, not the epilogue they make you pay for. The actual game ending of Prince of Persia shakes me to my core. And we just haven't seen that come back. Also, Beyond Good and Evil 2, there's a lot of weird shit happening.
I don't know if they're actually working on that game or not, because we saw the like, teaser trailer thing forever ago, and then it's just been silence.
I want to believe. Remember at one time Joseph Gordon-Levitt was like the face of that game?
Yeah, god, that was forever ago. I would say give us a remake, remaster, what have you, of the first one, because a lot of the people that played the first one will have amnesia by the time that the second one comes out. Like, just age gets to you. You start forgetting things.
Yeah, it happened to poor Ezio in Assassin's Creed Revelations, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So, would it surprise you to know that one of the rumors about Assassin's Creed Mirage is that the Season Pass, which historically an Assassin's Creed game would be $60 or $70, and the Season Pass would be another $30 on top, would it surprise you to know that a rumored remake of Assassin's Creed 1 is supposed to be included in the Season Pass?
That's a good way to do Season Passes. Like, give me more than just like skins and currency and stuff. Yeah, that is a surprise. If it ends
is
up
that
being
enough
true.
To make you go back?
Possibly. Possibly. We'll see. I'm one of those people that plays like every fifth Assassin's Creed game.
So that's a really good segue, because the new Assassin's Creed looks to be a bit of a departure from the previous ones. Again, this is all rumors. This is all stuff that leakers have given us online. But it looks like Assassin's Creed Mirage is going to take a few steps back and kind of get back to basics. Whereas Assassin's Creed Origins, Odyssey, and Valhalla have been very RPG based, it looks like Assassin's Creed Mirage is going to go to Baghdad. There's going to be a bigger emphasis on throwing knives, hiding, blending into crowds, a lot of NPCs in the streets where you can kind of manipulate them and do kind of social engineering. But they will be pulling back on outfitting your character with like a new helmet or a new staff. They're going to put the emphasis back on the assassinations. And also, it looks like they're taking away the choice to choose your gender. People are equating this most to Assassin's Creed Unity or Assassin's Creed Syndicate, kind of like that second or third generation of Assassin's Creed games. As someone that only plays every fourth or fifth AC, is that something that excites you? Is that something that makes you go, maybe I'll hold off?
I'm fine with that. Like, I don't need every game to have like a massive skill tree that I need to grind to unlock. I don't need RPG elements in every game that I play. So like, if you can tone that back, because like I 100%ed Valhalla, or at least I think I 100%ed it. I must have been close. Whoa. But it was like 120 hours. And like, it was that lucky stretch of time between like, you know, December and May where like nothing big was coming out. So I'm like, well, yeah, might as well play Valhalla. And I enjoyed the game. It had some very fun game modes, mechanics, stuff like that. But at a point, it was too much. And so I would put it down and just be like, why am I still doing this to myself?
I love the look in your eyes because I've been there, man.
Yeah, so it was very much just like, I enjoyed the gameplay of Assassin's Creed, like little bit of stealth, like the combat is fun. If you can cut out like 30% of the extra BS, then yeah, I think you've got a good one, because I would say that's sort of what Black Flag was. It had the open world stuff, but it wasn't, you know, 500 dots on a power up chart to have to go through.
Yeah, you know, I totally agree. I'm really bummed about the idea of losing the ability to pick your character, to choose between a masculine or feminine character. That hurts. But even if I look at Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which for my money is the best Assassin's Creed maybe ever, there's so much bloat in that game. And when it released, I was excited because, you know, I'm gonna play a brand spanking new Assassin's Creed at the start. I wasn't interested in Origins or the Egypt setting, but I really wanted to do the gods and Greece and Rome and blah, blah, blah. And as much as I loved it, that game took me like 4 years to finish.
Oh, yeah.
Because as cool as Cassandra is, there's so many side quests that are just not necessary.
Like, assuming...
Black Flag was killer, though.
Oh, Black Flag was so much fun. Like, assuming the leak stuff does all pan out, it looks like they at least have a lore reason for like not having choosable characters, because you're playing someone that was an NPC from your party in Valhalla. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going back in their timeline. So like, it's still not a good thing. Like, why couldn't we be like another person working along that? And then you could be masculine, feminine, whatever you wanted. But I at least, it seems like it's less of a thing. Like, they don't want that anymore. It's like, this is the story they wanted to tell. We'll see. We'll see if everything comes out true, because it was like one of my favorite characters from Valhalla.
Oh,
so yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Valhalla just didn't hit for me. And I think it was Eivor. I just didn't really jive with them. And it felt like every mission I had to travel an hour just to get there.
Yeah. There's a lot of that.
I've kind of taken a look at Mirage and I'm like, all right, I don't really, you know, the Baghdad setting is interesting, but it's not really speaking to me. So Valhalla might be the game I just play until a new setting comes out.
Yeah. There's something I can think like hook you on Valhalla if you know that it's coming. And like,
I know it.
Yeah.
I've seen what the DLC for that game is like.
Oh, it's not even the DLC. No, this is in the base game. Like, didn't touch the DLC. I never touched DLC on these games. Like, I'm so far like past playing it at that point that like being dragged in would cause me to break out or something. No, in the game, like, it's just side quests. They have like no impact on anything really, but you can fight King Lear's daughters.
Okay.
And they're tough. Like, I would say a couple of those fights are up there with like the Valkyries in God of War. So
I was about to reference. I remember your adventures fighting the Valkyries in the first God of War, because I was like, maybe I'll do it. And then hearing about you doing it, I was like, I don't need that platinum. I'm old and
you
haggard.
Can drop it down to easy and still get the plat.
So here's the thing. I'm kind of wrestling with. I played Assassin's Creed 1, 2, Brotherhood, like, played all of them through Black Flag. And then when Syndicate came out, I was like, I'm done. I don't need any more Assassin's Creed. And until then, I loved the lore. I loved the gameplay. And I think maybe I took a look at Origins and I was like, it's not Assassin's Creed to me anymore. I don't need this. But now what Assassin's Creed has morphed into is really interesting, but there's too much. So the idea of going back to like an AC1 or an AC2, where you're using the crowds, where you're almost playing the game more like Hitman. I love Hitman 3. That's really interesting to me. I'm curious if the market is going to respond to it, because who knows? Maybe the mass market wants the RPG element. The older games were definitely clunky. Do you think this is going to work in their favor or blow up?
I don't think they would be making those choices if they didn't think it was going to work. So, yeah, I think it'll work in their favor, because that's one of the things that put me off of like playing every Assassin's Creed game. Is like, even if you go back to like 1 through like Black Flag, like, they're extremely time consuming because you got a big open world, a lot of people to kill. So yeah, we'll see what happens. Like, not every game that comes out needs to be the only game that you're playing for 6 months, you know?
Case in point, Dreamlight Valley. That's going to be a game I play maybe 10 minutes a day, if that. And if I forget some days, who cares? But yeah. So we don't know the details of what's going to be in the season pass for Mirage until it gets announced on the 10th. People are saying that they're targeting a spring 2023 release date, which is going to be an interesting thing for me, because they typically come out November or October, right before the holiday rush hits. So Assassin's Creed games sell astronomically well. Moving into a spring release timeline is going to be weird. Resident Evil seems to have done it really well. Street Fighter took advantage of it. Jamie, do you have any reason to think that this game is going to sell better or worse, considering it'll be in spring?
Well, I think like the spring release date would have been fine if half the games that were supposed to come out this year had not also been pushed to the spring window of 2023. It's one of those things, like, it's so hard to tell how like any given game is going to sell regardless of like what competition it's going to have, just because like there's something for everybody out there. I think it'll do fine. I don't know if it's going to be like best selling Assassin's Creed game, but I don't think they're good. It's going to be one of those things where they're like, oh, this is a disappointment. We're going to go back to formula on it, you know?
Back to formula. So allow me to rattle off some of the games releasing in that supposed window. And let's just, for the sake of comparison, say that none of these games are on Game Pass and all of these games are the same price.
Yeah, for argument's sake, sure.
Yeah, for argument's sake. So I'm going to rattle some of these off. Tell me if you want to play Assassin's Creed, this supposed back-to-basics Assassin's Creed game, more than the ones that I'm going to rattle off.
Yeah, let's go in, assume they're all going to be $70 AAA games, because that's the new price, and we'll keep track from there. Okay, go.
Dead Island 2.
Didn't play the first one. Pass.
Okay. I kind of figured. I was like, yeah, this is an interesting one to start off with. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Want it.
So more than Assassin's Creed?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Nightingale.
I don't know what that one is.
And so you definitely want Assassin's Creed more. Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
Probably want it more.
Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League.
Probably want it more.
Let's see. Let's see. The Wolf Among Us 2.
Like, I, for argument's sake, I'll give it to Assassin's Creed. It's a Telltale game, and I know that, like, I'll have to wait for 5 months for all the episodes to be out. So,
Hogwarts Legacy.
I'm probably going to lean towards Hogwarts.
Dead Space Remake.
Want it more than Assassin's Creed.
Forspoken.
I think I can skip that one. So we'll give that point to Assassin's Creed.
Okay. So you know, kind of what I'm gleaming here is that 2023 is chock full of games that at least want to play more than this Assassin's Creed game. Looking at what
I was already at like $350 barring any like collector's editions or anything that are coming with those. So yeah.
I tend to look at the release window for that game. It's supposed to come out in March. Destiny 2 Lightfall releases February 28th. We still don't know when the Resident Evil 4 remake is going to come out. And on top of that, we've got Alan Wake 2. Redfall is a big one for me. There's just a lot. So I think based on what I'm seeing, I'm probably going to skip it. But here's the thing, Jamie. You're never just paying for Assassin's Creed Mirage. With this season pass, you're definitely, well, theoretically, rumoredly, going to get the remake of Assassin's Creed 1. Is that the strongest thing they could put in that season pass? If they were remaking a different Assassin's Creed, might you be more inclined, or is that like uber attractive to you?
I think it's definitely like a solid selling point, like maybe not so much for the game itself, but to get people to buy the season pass, because I guarantee there's a lot of people out there like me that like look at season passes on single player games like that. And it's like, no, why? I gave you the money already. Just give me the game. But yeah, I mean, that's sort of, if you want to, sort of like what they did with the Miles Morales game, where like you bought that game, but it gave you all the season stuff, season pass stuff from the first Spider-Man game. You got the remaster of that. So that's a trend I would not hate to see studios continue moving forward. Like, buy the new one, play some of the greatest hits.
Mm-hmm. And it's only going to help them. I think you saw a lot of studios in the last 2 or 3 years. I'm looking specifically at Capcom, re-release their games.
So many collections. So they
can be played. Yeah, because a lot of these games are locked on this old hardware. You know, there wasn't really a great way to play some of these older Resident Evil games because they were locked on PS3. But you re-release them with a new engine for PS4. That allows you to release it on that engine for many more generations to come. And I get the feeling that Ubisoft took a look at maybe Assassin's Creed 1, maybe the Ezio games, and they saw them getting a little long in the tooth. Yeah. And thought, we can kill two birds with one stone. We can market people on the season pass. If you've never played Assassin's Creed, we can sell you the first one and get you into the brand, into the IP. It's smart, but also in the back of my head, I'm like, but I already bought this game once. I don't care if it's a remake. And I don't know why that only applies with me to Assassin's Creed, but it kind of gets me.
I do like that your go-to for Capcom with those was like the Resident Evil games, and mine was like Mega Man, because like we've had Mega Man, Mega Man X collections forever. They're putting out the Mega Man Battle Network collection, which played those were fun, but they're on Game Boy Advance. Like, I'm not going to go buy like a used Game Boy Advance just to play those games, but give me a collection of them for $20 and like they're all nice and crisp on the TV. Yes.
Yeah, just in a heartbeat. Let me play the old games I love, but have them look good on a
TV.
That's
why I got that Ninja Turtles collection. Like, it's fun. Like, they're not remasters, but it beats having to go buy 7 different consoles to play those games.
I ended up getting the digital version of the Cowabunga collection on PlayStation. Yeah. And then I also got a disc because I'm so scared of them losing the license.
Yeah.
And having that be pulled, like the Simpsons game. I can dig out my old Xbox 360 and download it.
Yeah.
But I don't want to have to do that. That's a pain in the ass.
And for anybody that's wondering, the NES Ninja Turtles game is still the hardest thing you will ever do. Like, you think you've gotten better as a gamer in the last 30 something years since that came out. No, it is a humbling experience, and way to go, Konami. You
there is a really great feature where you can have the AI play for you.
Oh, so yeah, you can just watch.
Yeah, I
want to like, I want to find out if that'll like give me the trophies as well, because if so, then like, yes, I will just watch the first game
for archival purposes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
There's like a rewind feature, and that doesn't make it any easier. It's just like, oh, I died, go back, like I think you get 20 seconds or something like that. Nope.
I need to see a trophy. If I can just watch them do it, like you said,
yeah,
I will absolutely put it on my Xbox during the workday and then just let it happen.
Like, I've got no issue playing through the other games in those systems because they're all like the more traditional beat 'em ups. Like, I liked Ninja Turtles 3, the Manhattan Project. Like, Turtles in Time is on there, like both arcade and Super Nintendo versions. Like, those are doable. But that Nintendo one was just cruel.
Well, it looks like all of the trophies are for beating the individual games.
I believe that.
So you could theoretically go to the last level of every game, set the AI to play it, and then just watch it and collect those trophies. Well, I know what I'm doing during the workday tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to see if that works well during dinner tonight while I'm waiting on that.
You know, kudos to Digital Eclipse. They did the Aladdin and Lion King games. They did the Sonic Ultimate Genesis Collection. Good for them. I'm happy to see them back in the news for a good reason. It's better than some of the other reasons I've seen for other studios. I think that's going to about do it for this year episode of Party Chat. Jamie, if we wanted to see more of your content online, where might we go?
I'm on Twitter as Walt Disney's Frozen Head. You can find me there.
Fantastic. And yeah, I'm following
use it a lot because I'm a frozen head. Like, what's a frozen head got to say? But it's there.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Okay, I'm following you, but when I did it, it said don't ask questions, so I guess I will not. That's
smart.
That's very interesting. If you want to find me online, I'm Turbo Hoodie pretty much everywhere. If you go to itch.io/turbohoodie, you can see all of the tabletop RPGs that I have developed over the last few years. We just re-released an RPG based on the poems of Robert Frost. It's a very sad game, but it's very fun. So, hey, if you're into that, it's free. So go get it. Folks, if you want to join us further and talk about games, we have a Discord for that. You can head to bit.ly/partychatdiscord to join the conversation. It is also in the show notes if you like clicking links instead of typing out URLs. Additionally, you can tweet at us using the Twitter handle @AskThePartyChat. If tweets aren't your thing, totally get it. Drop us a line using the email address askthepartychat@gmail.com. And as always, big thanks to Sam Begich for the use of our theme song and tunes along the way. Your host next week is going to be Glenn Career and whoever embarks upon the journey with him as Chris Russell and I are traveling. Until then, though, take it easy. And I hope you have a good day. Bye.
Bye.